Out with Clement on 702. Let's walk the talk.
On the Hanging Out feature this morning, we've got the SARS Commissioner, Edward Kizveta. This is the man that's been at the forefront of rebuilding that institution after it was quite honestly destroyed by the state capture, or during the state capture project. And we're going to get to know him better this hour. I was surprised about a number of things. I didn't know he was a bishop. I'm interested about his taste in music, because it actually links to my own taste in music. We're going to get to know him better. He has worked as a lecturer. He's a trained electrical engineer. I saw he was once named the boss of the year when he was at Eskom. He's been at Transnet. He was the chief executive at Alexandra Forbes, a senior executive at First Rand Group. And he's got such a humble beginning and an inspirational story. Well, at least it inspired me when I've read about it. And I know it's going to inspire you too. Commissioner, thank you so much for making time for us. Welcome to 702.
Thanks. I hope my boss doesn't mind that in the middle of the workday I'm hanging out with you.
Yeah, that would be interesting. It's part of your work. We'll just tell him that. It's part of the work. First of all, I have to say, and we were talking about this off air, I was so impressed. I said to Abel, oh my God, The Mission is my favorite music that I listen to when I go running. And it makes me so emotional because I've cried to this song or this musical arrangement. And when you came in, I told you, oh, you love The Mission too. And you said it's made you emotional too.
Absolutely. I think if you watch The Mission and it doesn't touch your soul or the deepest part of you, there's something wrong. Because not only is the music so masterfully composed and orchestrated by Ennio Morricone, who wrote the theme song, not only is that evocative, but the actual human story and the total destruction and erosion of the people that was affected by the story also invokes in one our own history, our own suffering and oppression, and how, you know, when I listen to people who come from Europe, they often talk about several thousands of years of lineage and history. We can't go back more than two or three. And you're lucky if you can go back more than that, because so much of our history has just been totally destroyed. There's no record of it. And so it touches one deeply. And then, of course, Ennio Morricone's music just brings it to life.
Yeah. And we'll get to it in a moment. I want us to start off our chat from the beginning, right? Tell us about your upbringing. So your mom was, my understanding, a domestic worker, a seamstress. Your dad worked as a laborer at the Cape Town municipality. How was your upbringing?
You know, there's a word that says the best things in life are free. And we were materially deprived. We had very little. Often had to go to bed on a slice of dry bread or millipap, and didn't know where the next meal would come from. But the one thing that we were blessed with, two humble parents, as you said, a seamstress and a laborer, was we were blessed with a clear sense of identity. We knew who we were. We might not know where we would get the next meal from, but we knew who we were. And I've always said, the two most precious gifts that I received as a boy growing up on the dusty township of Kensington in the Western Cape was from my dad, the gift of the ethic of hard, honest work, and it serves me till this day. And from my mom, I learned the purpose of my life. I'm here to be a blessing. To help make the world a better place and make things better for others.
Yeah. How difficult was it not knowing where the next meal is going to come from? I mean, if there's three of you at home, I see it. But if there's eight of you at home as children, that's even more complex.
Well, often my younger brothers and sisters didn't even know that my mother's purse was bare. And so she would, very often we would go to the factories, the garment factories in Cape Town, in the Western Cape, in Maitland. We would collect off-cut materials. She would use it, and she would make clothes for children, little knicker boxes or dresses or pajamas. And I was her assistant late at night when some of the siblings were asleep. My two jobs was amazing for a boy of 8 years old. I would, because we had no electric sewing machine, mm-hmm. I would turn the machine handle for her, the kankit, so that she could use both hands. And then when she needed to change the color of the cotton, I had this wonderful opportunity to run the bobbin and rewind the bobbin with different color.
That was exciting for an eight-year-old. Exciting.
And she bribed me with there was a little biscuit called Odds On that she bribed me with, and she would tell me stories to keep me awake. And then at night, when I finally went to sleep and the following morning to school, she would then wash and iron and trim and cut the stuff. And when I came home from school, she would give me two things, a bag of clothes to go and sell and a groceries list and no money.
So you have to sell the
clothes, make money. So as an eight-year-old boy, you knew that whether or not your siblings would have dinner tonight was in your hands.
Sure. And
you could not come home until you sold enough clothes to get, you know, some money to go to the shop and buy some things and come home.
That's great responsibility.
Huge. And I always say, you know, I was thrust into leadership already as a boy of 8 years old when other boys were playing as they should in the park or on the field.
What would happen if you didn't sell any clothes? What do you say when you get home? Because that weighs on you in that it's not just this great responsibility, but it's also understanding that if I don't sell this, we're not eating tonight.
Well, simple. You just didn't come home until you sold enough to at least go and buy bread, you know, some potatoes. There was a shop across the road for us, and when the Kieswetter kids came into the shop, we were mocked because we never bought a bottle of fish oil, a packet of salt. We would buy a half a cup of fish oil. You know, they would pump it out with these suction pumps. Or we would buy, you know, a quarter pound of potatoes or stuff. So we were known as, in Afrikaans, Iko Mathokopi Willy Alvier. And, you know, you had to bear, you know, those brunts as a young kid. And you just had to steel yourself and do what's necessary.
But you were a smart kid growing up. I mean, the teachers proved it through assessments. Did you ever think that there's a possibility that I may escape this poverty, or at the very least go study further and come back and improve the lives of my family members?
You know, we not for a single moment did we believe that things could not change. And I think it also comes from being reared in a God-fearing family with a strong spiritual foundation, that there's a power out there that will take care of us and that would prevent us, you know, from being trapped in poverty, and that would help liberate us. Of course, you know, as a spiritual believer, growing up as a Christian, it wasn't all only about, you know, one day living your life so that you can get to heaven.
Yes.
It is about how to live your life while you're on earth to experience blessing, the divine blessing. So we never really gave up. But you touch on a very sensitive issue. Why was I subjected as a boy to psychological assessments? And later my mother to observation by the social workers? Because I was a curious boy and asked questions, but also I was myopic, so I couldn't see. And I was shy, and I sat in the class, and my work retarded. And it was only the careful observation of my mother that then took me for eye tests, and I was able to get some glasses. But eventually, the school then at the time saw it fit to send me for psychological observation. And so I went to, my mother and I went, you know, once a week to the Mental Health Society, and I was given all kinds of tests, and eventually the report was, but there's nothing wrong with this boy. In fact, he's a smart boy, was the words. And then they said, well, if he's smart, but he's still falling behind, then he must have a bad mother. So we were subjected to random visits by social workers to see if we were at school, to see if my mother was taking care of us. And it was, I think, all of those circumstances just made us more resilient and stronger to almost say, we're going to prove to the world that we're not who you think we are. And as a young boy, I realized that never, ever accept the label that other people want to impose on you. Define yourself who you want to be. And those two gifts that I received as a child, the one, the ethic of hard work. If you want to get something, work for it. Don't expect for it. Expect more of yourself than you expect of anyone else. Be the change that you want to see. Set high standards for yourself. That was what guided me from the ethic of hard work. And I think, thankfully, and I only reflected on that as an adult, if that was the only gift that I had worked for, I might have turned out as a successful professional, but very self-centered and very selfish. And that's where the balance of the blessing of my mother, that I'm here to make the world a better place, to be a blessing, has helped me to see my own success and accomplishment and what I could acquire, that I should use that as a gift to others.
Were you not frustrated, though, after matric? Because you grew up during the apartheid regime. Things were much different at the time. Bursaries were, especially for black people, were for if you wanted to do teaching or you wanted to do nursing. But that's not what you wanted to do. So wasn't that a frustration for you that, ooh, what does this mean now? Can I not study further and do what I've always wanted to do?
I can tell you many sad stories about that, but let me share with you that when I was in, already as a young boy, I knew I loved creating things. So I would build my own bed. I would play around with broken ovens. I would fix radios. I would put a bedroom switch, and half the time nearly
killed. How old were you?
I was a young boy, you know, 10, 12 years old. I was starting.
That's why they took you for psychological evaluation.
But I was a creator. I loved making things.
Yeah.
And I had an inquiring mind, curious about everything. How does things work? And take it apart to put it together again. And so I knew I loved music, but I loved engineering more. And I knew I wanted to study engineering. And sadly, there were no bursaries. When I went to ask the department for the bursary, they said they would only give me a bursary if I wanted to study nursing or teaching. And I wasn't at the time interested in either. So instead, I started working on the 8th of November, 1976. I started working as a laborer at a company in Epping until I eventually got indentured as an apprentice a year later at the Cape Town municipality, and then went on to finish my N courses at the technical college, and eventually went on to study engineering. So it was a hard journey with many, many adverse circumstances that would, I guess, ordinarily, you know, break one's spirit. But this whole sense of belief that you are the master of your own destiny, with the divine endowment of the gifts and the talents you have, ultimately you are the master of your destiny, and what you get out of life is what you put into life.
Yeah, and speaking of, because you mentioned music earlier, that's something you love. We'll play that song we were talking about, well, that musical arrangement we were talking about earlier on, which is your favorite. It's also my favorite too. After that, we're going to come to your calls and your WhatsApp voice notes. SARS Commissioner Edward Kizvita is hanging out with us this morning. 011-883-0702 is the number to dial. You can send a WhatsApp as well on 072-702-1702.
Edward Kizvita is one of the most amazing persons I know. He should run this country and we would be top of the world. A great, humble servant of the people. with wonderful ethics. Well done, Edward.
Do you get that a lot where people ask you, can you just be president, run this country?
Yeah, that's a big ask, Clement.
Yeah?
It's a big ask.
Yeah. I see you were quite emotional from the song.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, if it doesn't touch your soul, then you probably don't have a soul.
Mm.
I put some with my younger son, Matthew. We once reflected on our loved ones who had passed.
Mm-hmm.
And we used this music, an arrangement thereof, to write some words that basically says they're always connected to us.
Mm.
And all we have to do is just look into our, through the eyes of our soul, and they will always be present.
Mm. Look through the eyes of your soul.
So it's quite emotional because for me it crosses the, regardless of what you may think happens on the other side of the river of life, I respect people have different views of it, on it. But for me, life is bigger than ourselves, and life does not commence at birth and doesn't end at death. It's and we are just a very brief manifestation of this wonderful gift of life.
Mm.
Life is only the, birth is only the commencement of human existence, and death is the end of human existence for a brief individuation of. But life is big. Life is beyond our understanding, and we don't know what happens on the other side. It would be arrogant to believe that there's nothing.
Mm.
And so we are always trying to connect ourselves to something that's bigger than ourselves, something that has eternal dimensions, not bound by space, time, and distance.
Mm-hmm.
And so when my eldest son is a music therapist, he's also into music. So we often create stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of those things that's central to it.
Yeah. Do you find that music is also therapy for you? Has it been therapeutic?
I mean, in many ways, music has been a balm for our life, for our soul. If I think of whether it is feeling a sense of joy, there's nothing more than music that can transcend us to the heights of ecstasy and bliss as human beings. But also when you're sad, the sense of comfort that music can bring you. And then when you're in despair, the sense of hope that music can revive. For me, music is such a wonderful gift. And it's often a refuge in the struggle, our struggle history. You know, if you think of songs like Shosholoza, miners singing the song, you know, imagining the train, and many other songs that was used as an alternative expression to the sense of oppression, and in itself provided brief sense of freedom and liberation. Mm-hmm. So music is multidimensional. It is powerful.
Yeah.
And it also transcends languages and cultures, which again brings us to this notion that as human beings, we are indivisibly connected to each other. We are more similar than what we are different. And I am personally frustrated often when political leaders in the world amplify our differences and almost make us to believe we are enemies of each other, and actually we are just part of the same human race, more and indivisibly connected.
Yeah. Someone on the WhatsApp line says, wow, Clement, I was locked out and then I came in as this song was playing, and suddenly I'm feeling so much peace and contempt that I've never felt, and I want to know that the name of that piece so I can listen to it. Thank you so much to the commissioner for this song. So that's from the movie The Mission. So that one is what
Gabriel's oboe.
Yeah, Gabriel's oboe. Just if you just Google or you go on, because I've got it on iTunes. In fact, just go check the whole album, like the whole theme songs from The Mission. just type the mission, because all of that musical arrangement is quite exceptional, quite incredible. All right, it's 10:31.
Hanging out with Clement on 702. Let's walk the talk.
It's 23 minutes before 11 o'clock. Edward Kiswita is the SARS commissioner who is hanging out with us this morning. Yo, there are so many people that you've said so many things that are filled with wisdom that people are quoting you. I can't even count how many quotes people have made. Bus B on Twitter says, never accept labels that people impose on you. Always define yourself. SARS Commissioner Edward Kiswita. There are others as well that I'll read for you a little later on. It's just fascinating seeing how valuable people see and hear what you say. It's a lot of wisdom. And especially for us young people who are younger than you, that means a lot, because that just helps us, because we're still relatively new in this journey of life. You've been here for quite longer than we have. I'm going to ask you to please put on your headphones. I want us to take some calls on 011-883-0702 and some WhatsApp voice notes. Manesh, you're calling us from Johannesburg. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Sure.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just like to speak to you about the greatness of the man you have in your studio today.
Yeah.
So I met him a few years ago when his son was a teacher at the school my children attended, St. James Preparatory.
He was still a teacher at St. what?
St. James Preparatory.
Yeah. Hold on, Manesh. Manesh, your line is not the best, my brother. I'm going to put you back to the producers, yeah? Let's try and reestablish that line. It's not so good, and I want to hear what you've got to say. In the meantime, let's go to the WhatsApp voice note.
Good morning, Clement, and good morning to your guest, Edward Kiswita. Wow, what an intellect, what a humble person. What an intelligent man. Yo, he is everything that is good. He is everything that is lovable. My name is Sarah Ntuli. I know him from Alexander Forbes when he was our group CEO. And Mina, I used to work at the little branch in Hatfield, which I normally used to call it a fly-by-night branch of Alexander Forbes. But yeah, I was stationed in the Hatfield branch as a receptionist there. I know it won't be easy for him to remember me or even recognize me, but I know him because of his excellent leadership. May the good Lord keep us for you, Mr. Kiswita. Thank you.
Clement, good morning. Thank you so much for bringing this wonderful, amazing, anointed leader. Yes, I'm calling him a leader because I think that's who he is. That's what he is. And like someone had suggested, I would definitely vote for him if he would someday decide to form a political party. I think he's so wise. And there's something about him that reminds me of my faith in Jesus. There's this peace about him. There's this authenticity about him. There's this strength about him that I really, really, truly admire. I just want to ask, does he have a book that he's published? How can one continue to learn from such a well of wisdom that is coming out of him? Please inform me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Where is the book? Hashtag where is the book?
Yeah, you know, it's wonderful to hear that. Mm. One's humble and simple life has the ability to awaken and inspire, especially the young people. Mm. And if Sarah is still listening, Sarah Ntuli, I'd just like to give her a shout out for remembering the time we could spend together. Mm. You know, I write a lot. It's all unpublished. But I'm gonna, and I do owe myself a book that we can publish, and I was hoping to do so at the end of this term, but you know, I'm stuck in this job for another 2 years.
Let me just say,
I did three things that I have written, but it's privately published. When my son Lance became 21, he had most of the things that a young person need already, and I wanted to give him something that is different. And I wrote him a letter. And the letter, the title of the letter was Being a Blessing, because it was so central to me. And then I wrote a second letter on another theme and a third letter. And I just continued writing, and I wrote a letter a day for 21 days. And then bound it, and on his 21st birthday, the following week, I presented him with a book, and the title of the book is 21 letters to my son.
Oh my God.
So we still agreed that he should respond, and we should publish that as a book. When his younger brother, Matthew, then was 21, I wanted to do something, and I wrote 21 songs. Because Matthew is a composer, and Matthew owes me a musical production, and the book that I gave him was 21 Prayers. And then when my parents grew older, I wanted to express my deep appreciation for their contribution to my life, and I wrote a book, and the title of the book is Parents Perfect for Me. And it was a love story and a story of appreciation to. So I love writing. I just not have had the courage to share that with the world.
Do you write poems for your wife?
If
that's what you've done for your sons.
I love prosing. I love writing. We have an established tradition that when every member of my family becomes 50 years old, you know, when you're as old as me, my siblings are all over 50 already, they get an ode from me.
Wow. May you write a letter about, what date is it today? it is the 18th of April, yeah. The 18th of April.
I studied,
hanging out with Clement.
I studied cognitive science, which is the teaching of thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the protocols we teach people to improve their thinking is to write, because thinking is a reflection of how we think. And we use that to enhance and improve one's thinking, just to express that. You should try it. I believe everyone should write a book before they die.
Sure. All of us?
Yes, all of you. Every story is worthy of being told.
Of being told, yeah. All right, let's go back to Manesh in Johannesburg. We've got you on a better line now, Manesh. Go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
Good. Well, I'd just like to say, you know, what a great man you have in your studio. So a few years ago, my sons attended a school called St. James Preparatory, where Mr. Kispert's son was the music teacher. And Mr. Kispert, for our good luck and our good fortune, was a regular visitor at the school. And I had the honor, and my children had the honor, of hearing him speak and give a few talks. And till today, this was maybe 7 years ago, but till today, those are highlights in my children's lives. And in further to that, more than that, we had the honor of meeting Mr. Kispert's father. So we've been to, at the school, they once gave a show where three generations, Mr. Kispert's father, Mr. Kispert himself, and his son Matthew performed. And what a special, special
day. Wow.
What a special day that was. And we still, as a family, remember it fondly. And the talks that he gave, my God, they were inspiring. And I must say, for my children who are 8 years old and, you know, 10 years old, what a great blessing it was for them to be in his company. So I'd just like to tell him, thank you very much. We remember those days fondly. We remember all the talks and the musical concerts, and geez, just being in the company was such a blessing. He's a great man indeed.
Oh, what a beautiful reflection.
Oh, thank you, Manesh, for honoring those moments. And please give each of your children a hug from me, but also from Matthew.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when you said you're a musical family, it makes sense now. I mean, three generations, you know, on stage, that's just quite incredible. Okay, Abel, can we just do Just another song a little bit and then we'll continue talking. What else is your favorite out of a list? Because you gave us six songs.
Wow. Let's switch maybe to...
Do you want Frank?
Frank Sinatra.
Oh my goodness. Why do we have the same taste of music?
Well, we probably share some DNA as well.
We probably do. Here's some Frank.
Hanging out with Clement on 702. Let's walk the talk.
All right, 7 minutes before 11 o'clock, we're wrapping up our chat with Edward Kizveta, who is the SARS commissioner. I've got a message here from someone. Okay, let me start with this one. Who's this? This is Lungelo Zulu, says, Clement, the fantastic show with Edward Kizveta. I'm a former SARS employee at the Alberton Assessment Center. My time at SARS was under the former commissioner, Tom Moyani. Colleagues that are currently there have nothing but bucket loads of positive news to report on him. The mood has changed at the workplace. Employees are forward-looking. They're excited to be part of the higher purpose. I myself, I'm considering retaining to the receiver of revenue now and help rebuild the institution as my own contribution to this wonderful country. So thank you, Edward Kizveta. Please keep going, sir. That's a message from Lungelo. You were supposed to have actually stopped. I mean, your term ended and then the president set you down and convinced you to continue and you couldn't say no to him.
Well, yeah, I mean, I need the name of a good therapist, as I said, Clement. Yeah. So, yeah, I should have retired in 12 days' time.
Yeah.
And when the president asked me to that he would help through a transition period, give stability to SARS, at a leadership level, and we had a deep conversation about my concerns, but also the opportunity that it provides us, and I finally agreed to stay. One of the central reasons for me was I believed that in the 2 years that I agreed to stay on, we can embed and cement the gains we've had. COVID really slowed us down, while COVID allowed us to accelerate our technology project. The people project slowed down. And for me, embedding, you know, Lungelo speaks of the people culture, and it's wonderful to hear that echoed from him. But what I really would like to say is I believe over the next 2 years, we need to embed that, because ultimately it's not about a single leader. It's about building a system where from the inside out, the DNA is about integrity, a service ethos, and a higher purpose, as Lungelo refers to.
What are your reflections of where SARS is now, 30 years into this democracy?
You know, our democracy is a gift that we should never take for granted. And the strength of our democracy is often and incorrectly left to its leaders. If I want to invite every South African to say, if we want our democracy to work, every one of us must pick up agency. Every one of us must look to be a contributor and not a consumer of democracy. In this regard, SARS has played an incredible role. In the 30 years of our democracy, SARS has collected 21.5 trillion rand, which have, in South Africa, given our history, kept many, many of the most vulnerable and poor from certain destitute, being certainly destitute. I want to speak to South Africans and say to, for those who still may resist this notion of paying tax, to help SARS be an agency that serves our democracy well.
Yeah.
Firstly, by helping to be compliant, helping to contribute what the law requires us, and then hold the political leaders accountable. Don't let them off the hook if they fail to deliver the service. Political leaders are often very, you know, boisterous and animated when they make promises, when they want people to vote for them. And then after that, they hardly are seen. But more importantly, we don't hold them accountable.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be beholden to political parties. When we have made our vote, as we are entitled to in law, we must make sure they deliver. Because no political party, no political leader has unconditional entitlement to lead.
Yeah.
Not even a public servant such as myself should be entitled to lead.
Yeah.
We should take our work seriously instead of taking ourselves seriously.
What's your message to those that are in government? Because your message to us as taxpayers is, and as South Africans is, let's help you at SARS. Let's be tax compliant. But it takes a lot of trust in the government and in those politicians for us to have our tax morality even increase. They've got some work to do themselves as well, to say to us, look at what we do with the monies that SARS collects, with your taxpayers' money. So therefore, continue paying it and let other people be inspired to pay it. So what's your message to them?
I follow a stewardship model of leadership. Mm. And my message to every public servant at my level as director generals, but also their teams, is to say, it is a privilege to be in the positions we are.
Mm.
Revere it, honor it, and commit every moment of that privilege to make sure the work you do serves people, that you can measure it to the extent that the material conditions of the people whom we serve are positively impacted. If we cannot at night go and close our eyes with the knowledge that we have served not our own interest, but the interest of our democracy, we have failed the people who trust in us.
Mm. SARS Commissioner Edward Kizveta, thank you so much for hanging out with us here on the Clement Manyathela Show. I really appreciate your time.
It was
my
pleasure.
I know you're a busy man.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. This has been incredible. It's a minute before 11.